So, I'm so f***ed up. I don't know when this is gonna end. I have another 40 miles to ride. Like, what the f***?
This is the Bike Pack Racing Podcast with Ezra Ward Packard and Andrew Onnerma.
Welcome back to the Bike Pack Racing Podcast. This is episode 14, our 2022 Tour Divide preview show. I'm your host, Ezra Ward Packard, and I am joined by Andrew Onnerma. Andrew, how's it going? I feel like we're like a little sporadic with when we can actually like match up our schedules and do these together. So it's fun when we actually like get it done.
Yeah, for real. I'm good, man. I just finished up my weekend, so it's about to be another 4 days of moving around furniture. So kind of the final light at the end of the tunnel before it's back to the real world. But this is a good way to end the weekend, being able to chat about the Tour Divide a little bit. You just sent me over an image of your setup, so I can't wait to just dive in, talk about your setup, your game plan, a little bit of everything. So I'm going to let you take the wheel, and I'm going to be asking a bunch of questions.
Awesome. Yeah, so if you are listening to this, the plan is to release this, I think probably the day before the Divide starts. So the Divide starts 8 a.m. in Banff, Canada on June 10th, which is going to be Friday. So this will come out the day before. And then after that, we are honestly going to be pretty radio silent for a few weeks there. Me and Andrea, partners on this podcast, I've got the editing know-how. I've got the software to do it. So I'm kind of the designated editor. So sadly, Andrew won't be going alone for these 2 weeks. But I promise, when we get back, I'm going to have nothing going on. So brace yourself, because we're going to have podcasts coming at you left and right. Also, just a lot of like really cool stuff coming up in July. We've got North to South Colorado coming up. We're going to have to circle back to Unbound XL this past weekend. A lot of interesting stories there. We've got some connections. Stephanie Hall, who was on the podcast earlier, she had a rough go of it. I would love to talk to her about everything that went wrong. So lots of content coming. But honestly, for me, it's just been laser focus on the Divide. So Andrew, take it away. Ask whatever you want, man.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, because I'm still staring at this beautiful setup right now, I just want you to run through your bike, your tires, your bags, a little bit of everything. And obviously, we're not going to deep dive into 45 minutes of every single little detail, but just let people know what bike are you on and what were some of the key decisions with your setup.
Yeah, so it's all built around the frame set, which is a 2019 Bombtrack Hook EXTC. This was actually a graduation present from Tom Beisel, who was my boss back when I worked at Downtown Bicycles in Northfield, Minnesota. My old Trek checkpoint got absolutely destroyed at the Mid-South, and they wouldn't warranty it. Tom felt bad about it, so as a graduation present, he gave me this. I mean, it's called a bomb track, but the thing is bomb-proof. Like, I have ridden across the country on this thing. I did North to South Colorado on it. I started Arkansas High Country Race. I did Unbound on it. I've crashed this thing. You know, nothing serious, but there have been a number of crashes. So yeah, really, this is a great like bike pack racing frame set. Absolutely love it. We've got a little suspension on the front. We got an MRP Baxter 60 millimeter short travel fork. I made this decision to go with a fork after North to South Colorado last year, where for a month after the race, I just had some weird hand issues from, yeah, just my riding style. Like, I have an aggressive riding style where I'm not like, I'm going downhill and I'm going hard, right? And that means I'm hitting chunky stuff. And that's what my bike is kind of all about. It's all about durability. I'm 6'1". I don't know how much I weigh. I don't weigh myself. But like, I'm not a super light rider, and I'm a physical rider. So I just need stuff that withstands the abuse I put it through. So for me, it's all about like, weight's great and all, but durability, durability, durability. Wheel set is Head Belgium G Plus rims. The front is a Sunschmidt Dynamo hub, so I'm going to be self-sufficient when it comes to power. Rear is a DT Swiss 350, you know, just kind of a workhorse hub back there. Drivetrain, total hodgepodge of Altegra and GRX. It was originally like an all Altegra drivetrain, but over the time I've switched out some GRX stuff. So the crankset is now GRX. So I can run, what is it? It's a 4631 for the crankset. And then I've got an 1140 cassette in the back with a Wolftooth. I think it's the Road Link that I'm running back there just to make sure that my GRX rear derailleur, which switch that out just for the clutch. Every once in a while, I'll be going down to descent where I'm like, I need a clutch or otherwise my chain slap is just absolutely unreal. other things about this bike of note. I got a power meter, 4i power meter on the GRX crankset. I still train with power. I will look at power on the divide kind of just as a joke. You know, it's like, what power number are you trying to hold for 2,600 miles? I don't know. I just like that number. I just like looking at that number when I'm going up climbs and being like, yeah, I feel good here. I'm just going to kind of stick with it. It's just another thing to almost distract you in these bike pack races. Yeah.
Which is something I want to touch on here in a little bit, but still just running through the setup. We glossed over the tires. So I'm a sucker for tires.
Oh, yes.
It's like a lot of my decisions come around what tire can fit in the frame. So what are you rocking for tires?
I am rocking the Terravale Rutland. In the front, I have a 27.5 by 2.1. A little bit more clearance in the front with that suspension fork. And then in the back, I have same tire, except now it's a 650B by 47C. You know, of all of my equipment, I think Terravale tires might be my favorite, like, my favorite thing.
I've had a lot of experience with Terravale, and I truly have no complaints. Like, the 47C cannonballs were what I used for a long time when I had a Salsa Warbird riding here in the Ozarks. And I've used the Rutlands as well. I haven't used the 650B version, but yeah, the Rutlands, man, they steer really well, especially when you got one in the front. What are you thinking about as far as rolling resistance on all the pavement and everything? Does that play a factor at all in your decision, how you have knobs everywhere versus how you see a lot of people rocking a smooth center tread or something that's just more minimal and distributed throughout?
Yeah, so, like, I've ridden these. Like, these are brand new tires that I threw on there. In terms of rolling resistance, it's just not my... We were talking about this a little bit before we hit record. My biggest fear is a tire issue. The number of times I have had tire issues with other brands of tires, like, that's kind of my biggest fear, right? Arkansas High Country race, destroyed a tire, couldn't get it reseated, went through all my tubes, had to bail off the course. Super similar thing at Unbound 200, where, I mean, I'm just all about durability, right? Like, I could run, oh, what's the name of Terravale's?
The Washburn.
The Washburn. I love the Washburn.
Center tread.
Yep. Yeah. I almost went with the Washburn. Everyone I talked to said, go with a little bit more knob. It's not going to make that big of a difference. Like, yes, there are some pavement miles on the divide, but also it becomes a situation where the divide is so long that you're almost using those pavement miles as recovery rather than, like, attacking those pavement miles in a way, right? Where the pavement miles are like, sweet, now get in your aero bars, eat a shit ton of food, pull out your phone, you know, do all that stuff where, you know, focus on the gravel, focus when it's, like, hard riding, and then get on the pavement and ride hard, but also just, like, relax a little bit, chill a little bit. So that was kind of my thought process in the tire selection. And yeah, I can't recommend Terravale tires enough. Like, I have, like, ridden multiple sets of Terravale tires to the threads where you can, like, literally see the threads, and they're not, like, super high TPI tires. So like there's a lot of rubber there, thousands of miles on them, haven't gone flat. That's just so key to me. Like there, nothing frustrates me more than flat tires. Yeah, so.
I hear that. That's awesome. Cool. So that gives a little bit more insight on that choice there. Something tried and true for yourself, which means a lot. Let's see. So you got 3 bottles on the bike. How many liters of water are you anticipating to be able to carry at a time?
Yeah, so I've got those 3 bottles on the bike. And then if you also look at my front handlebar roll, you'll see there's another liter, which is a soft bag stashed there. Everyone I've talked to has said 3 bottles is plenty, except for a few stretches. The Great Basin is going to be a stretch, and then New Mexico is also going to be a stretch. I don't have anything on my back. I have my jersey pockets. So my mindset is, you know, if it does get really hot and I need all my fluids, I'm going to have 3 bottles on the bike. I'm going to have some water bottles stuffed in my jersey pockets. And then I'm also going to have that liter on the front. The other thing about the Divide is, you know, especially in like most of the areas, like the northern states, New Mexico, water becomes an issue. But Colorado, it's like there are rivers and streams everywhere.
No doubt.
That front, the collapsible bottle is a water filter. So I will just use that. It's a Katahdin. Oh, I don't remember the name of it, but it's just a super simple water filter. If I need to filter water, just run it through that. Good to go.
Yeah, that's the same filtration system I have right now. Is it a 2-liter bladder that you have on it or a 1-liter?
It's just a 1-liter.
Okay. Yep. Okay.
And that's cool. What fits with my like custom handlebar roll thingy where I sewed shock cord in there and some mesh that I like cut out of an old backpack and
nice.
You know, MacGyvered it a little bit, but it works well. Yeah. It works well. It does the job.
And then I'm sure you'll end up posting a photo as the like the cover for this episode specifically. But we got like a seat bag, we got a half frame bag, we got a jerry can, a top tube bag. You got 2 feed bags or 1 feed bag?
We got 2 feed bags up there.
And a front roll, and then that bladder filtration system like you talked about.
Yep.
So that's basically all the bags. Is there any one bag company you're trending towards, or is it just throwing together whatever you get over time?
Yeah, so honestly, with my bags, there's a lot of like really cool bag companies out there. You know, Andrew Strempke has his new company, Dispersed Bikepacking, making some really sick bags. The thing with me is I just abuse my stuff. I just destroy it like so much that really the only like nice bag I actually have on this bike is a Porcelain Rocket Mr. Fusion. They were Porcelain Rocket was purchased by Rockiced, so they're still making the Mr. Fusion, but that's really the only like in my mind like really nice bag that I have. Everything else I like can get it through Pro Deals through my job. So, you know, the Revelate stuff and the Bontrager bags, they're simple. They do the job. I'm not going to say they're the nicest bags, but I just like beat my stuff up so much that, you know, I replaced my half frame bag and I'd only had it for 2 years. And it cost me like $60, which for me, that's like a pretty good value in terms of use.
Yeah.
Where I like really nice stuff, but at the same time, I'm also like, I can't spend a whole bunch of money on really nice stuff if I'm just going to destroy that in 2 years. Like, that's where it's like, do I really need a $200 frame bag right now? Or can I get by with this $60 half frame bag?
No, so that's a great point.
That's kind of my mindset.
There's more bag companies out there that want people testing out like the kind of riding you're doing where like, hey, you want to know how to make a bag better? I'm going to go take it on the Tour Divide. And then by the end of it, I can tell you what was working and what wasn't working on it. So where's the sleep kit and what is your sleep kit?
So the sleep kit lives in the front handlebar roll. We have a REI Magma Flash 30-degree sleeping bag in there. We have a Therm-a-Rest Uberlight NeoAir sleeping pad. We have a Sea to Summit sleep pillow, and then we have what is the ground cloth, ground tarp for, I think it's the Did I say flash? I think the sleeping bag is a magma. It's not a flash, but the ground cloth is a flash two-person REI tent, and I just took the ground cloth from it as kind of like a tarp.
Okay.
With that being said, how my sleep system usually works is I'm riding well into the night, and I will be like putting on clothing, and lots of times I will like change into my sleep clothing for that last hour, where if I'm like, okay, like we're getting towards the end, like I need to go to the bathroom, I'm gonna throw on my, I have a pair of like super lightweight running shorts that I like sleeping in just for the breathability aspect. I will throw those on. I will throw my rain pants over that. I will throw my, you know, tech t-shirt on that I also sleep in, my long sleeve jersey over that, my puffy jacket over that. You know, if it's really cold, I'll throw my rain jacket over all that. And so like my actual sleep system might be a little bit light, but once I have all my stuff on me, I've tested it a few times up on Mount Humphreys. It served me well. You know, I'm also just capable of just like falling asleep when it is a little bit chilly. So, you know, up north, I'm expecting that there will be a few nights where I'm a little bit chilly. I'm just going to fall asleep. You know, even riding across the country, we had some nights that were like below freezing and I slept no problem. Like I just, you know, pull that sleeping bag all the way over my head, pull the string, like have a tiny little air hole and just a little cocoon and fall asleep. No problem.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, it's, you've obviously put it to the test, so it's not like you're going in trying something for the first time. Sick. Is there anything notably different about your setup, in your opinion, that might not be as common with other people, whether it be something that you bring or something that you don't bring? Is there anything where someone goes, hey, Ezra, what stands apart with your setup? Is there anything that comes to mind?
Honestly, not really. Like I have studied other people's setups so much and tested my own setup so much. This is a very similar setup to what I used to ride across the country. This is a very similar setup that I used for Pinions and Pines. You know, there's like a few minor adjustments where I have to bring a little bit more of stuff for a race that's 2 weeks. But really, I don't feel like I'm like compromising in a way with this setup. There's nothing that I'm like, I really wish I had that item. It's all stuff that I will use a lot and that I'm like very comfortable using. And that's like, that's my most important thing, is like, there's nothing that I'm bringing that I'm not like very familiar with how it works, what it works well in. You know, my rain jacket, if it's a little bit chillier, it's great as another layer. If it's like a warmer rain, I'm almost like, do I really need it right now? Like it, for sure. You know, like little decisions like that. Like, I don't like using the word dialed anymore because I really feel like nothing is ever like perfectly dialed, but I've done my homework. Like, that's what I'll say on that, is I feel confident and comfortable. And you know, like this whole like setup, I have a spreadsheet with everything I'm bringing where, you know, every bag, I know exactly what I'm putting in that bag. And yeah, it definitely changes, but it's all like organized on that spreadsheet, just ready to go.
Damn. Okay. And what about your repair kit? So like your tools and repair kit, since you are a mechanic by trade, what's just like a brief run through of what you're bringing in case shit hits the fan, which inevitably seems like at least one piece of shit will hit the fan over the course of this long of a ride.
Yeah, you say inevitably, but at the same time, knock on wood, like go get your bike maintenance, go get your bike worked on before you go on this event. Make sure that your bike is, you know, don't do it 2 days before the race. Do it a week before. Break everything in. Go on a bunch of shakeout rides. Don't go on 1 5-minute shakeout ride. Go ride that bike for a week. Let things settle. And then, like, fingers crossed, knock on wood, all those things, everything should go smoothly. If disaster does strike, things that I've got. I've got my, it's a Crank Brothers multi-tool. Absolutely love that thing. Have built, you know, multiple bikes out of a box with that thing. I can do so much with that multi-tool. I've got a pair of quick link pliers, a few quick links in case my chain does break. I'm honestly not planning on changing my chain. That's something that I'm always a little bit confused on when people are changing their chain halfway through the divide.
Yeah.
The lifespan of a chain should be 4,000 miles. We're not riding 4,000 miles. So
are you stripping it down and waxing it before you go? What makes you confident in the chain lasting so long?
That's just like, I usually get 4,000 miles out of my chains. Just like, that's usually what I get. And it's like, I'm not stripping it down and waxing it. I am trying to keep my chain clean. So, you know, like that, when I was riding across the country, that was one of the biggest changes I made compared to previous groups, where previous groups would only do bike maintenance on their rest days. We did bike maintenance every single day. Every single day, you get into camp, you take your panniers off your bike, you go back to your bike. I have rags, I have chain lube. You clean your chain right away, right? We were averaging 85 miles a day. It just makes sense to clean your chain. I had a little checklist where if there was something wrong with a kid's bike, they wouldn't tell me. They would mark it on the checklist. So as the mechanic, I could go take care of it. But at the same time, I wouldn't forget things. That's kind of my approach when it comes to these bike packing races, where I'll lube my chain anytime I stop, right? It is one of the first things that I do when, unless I'm like dying of thirst, I'm getting off my bike, I'm pulling out my bandana rag, which I will like replace anytime I like see another bandana that's super easy to grab at a gas station. I'm like, okay, time for another one of these. Lubing that chain, wiping off all the excess, making any little adjustments that need to be made. Maybe my brake is rubbing. And then I go do my resupply, right? It's one of the first things that I do, that just so it's just done and move on.
Nice. I like
and
that.
Yeah, I think like a dirty chain, that's why your chain gets worn out, right? It's when all that grime is in there and just stripping down those rollers, and it just stretches out. In my entire cycling career, I think I broke two chains, like one recently, and I looked at how worn it was and I was like, oh yeah, I've been riding all winter on this chain and I have like 5,000 miles on it, right? Like, it's time to replace it. Everything else, it's like I replace my chain before it gets to that, you know, 75% wear mark using the tool. So
okay.
In my mind, I'm like, if you replace your chain midway through the divide, you don't know if it is going to properly bind with your cassette,
for sure.
Or you're just going to have a freaking skippy cassette for the next 1,000 miles.
Yeah, for 1,000 miles.
So, like, honestly, if you were at the point where you need to replace your chain, you're probably buying a new cassette, and that's just a hassle that I don't want to deal with.
No doubt. Cool. So not bringing an extra chain. You know how to take care of your chain. That's really important. You have a lot of confidence in your tires. How many tubes are you bringing with you?
Yep. So I am bringing two Bolito ultralight tubes, and then I am bringing one standard tube just in case I do have to like throw patches on it. Patching the two Bolito tubes, not a good time. I've never had to do it because, knock on wood again, I've never had a two Bolito tube fail me. At North to South Colorado, I rode the final, it was over 100 miles. I broke a second spoke on my old junky wheel set that I got for $200. Don't do that. Spend money on your wheel set. Get in a good wheel set, really. Like, shifting is for show. Wheels are for go. Like, that is
nice.
Wheels are so important. Like, just
like
good wheel sets, good high quality stuff makes such a big difference. I threw that Tubolito tube in, rode it all the way to the finish. No problems at all. And I wasn't holding back. Like, once I got enough pressure in there, like, I was descending like full on. I wasn't gingerly picking my lines. So
Brad. Yeah, so then
three
from
tubes
there,
total.
Yep. You got what, like, do you have an extra set of brake pads? Two extra set of brake pads?
Yep. I have an extra two pairs of brake pads. Once again, like, that's going to be weather dependent. If it gets like super wet and nasty, and you know, one day like that can absolutely strip your brake pads. I'm sure that happened at Unbound this past weekend, where I'm guessing there are some people that went through an entire set of brake pads real quick. Again, for the divide, like, brakes only slow you down. Like, don't be hitting those brakes. Then again, there are some sections where, yeah, you're going to be hitting the brakes, but
yeah,
I'm ready to do that. Other things that I think everyone should have for bikepacking is a good embroidery, or not embroidery, it's a carpet needle, right? So it's like a thicker needle with like a bigger eyelet. And then what I use is dental floss. Okay. Dental floss is great. And then super glue. And if you like slice a sidewall, that does the trick. I had to do that on my ride across the country, and it was actually like in the middle of my tread, which wasn't great because like riding on the road, like slowly stripped it down. But you know, like the Strempkes have done that a number of times. I think that's where I learned that trick, and that's just a great thing to have. I just have it wrapped in electrical tape on my tire lever. Good to go.
Nice.
Slice sidewall. I hate talking about these things, Andrew. Andrew, I'm like stressing out. I'm like, no. These are not going to happen. I'm going to have zero mechanicals.
I wanted to touch on it a little bit just because I know there'll be questions about that. So now I just want to run into a little bit of your strategy, a little bit of the course itself. So like you mentioned, starting Friday, June 10th, last time we talked together, you said you're riding your own race. You're trying not to pay too much attention to what's happening at the front. It's a long way to go, not getting too obsessed in the dots. And if Sofyan's going for 14 days on end with no sleep whatsoever, if he does that, it'd be less than 14 days. So what's your game plan? Friday morning, everybody starts. What's your mindset?
So this is where it gets really interesting, is right now those Canadian passes, like there is still snow up there, and their forecast looks like there might be even more snow up there.
Wow.
Which really freaking excites me. Like, honestly, I am so freaking stoked on, you start the Tour Divide, you think you're going to be riding your bike, and right away, Coco Claims punches you in the face with an 8-hour hike a bike.
Yeah.
Like, I love that. I am so into that, because that's like, I don't try to like route rides that make me hike a bike that, you know, send me up stuff that's unrideable. But where I live in Flagstaff, that just inevitably happens, you know, riding up Waterline Road, which is a road on kind of the opposite side of Humphreys from where the ski resort is. Super cool. No vehicles allowed on the road. And it just goes up and up and up and up and up and up and up. Like, there have been a number of times where I just go out on rides on that road and I end up hiking through the snow for a few hours. Like, this just kind of happens. I live in a van. I don't have a trainer. When the weather is shit, I'm still going to go ride, and I do like try to be strategic about where I ride and where I think it's going to be like relatively dry. But I hit mud, and I'm just like, you know, that cross country runner aspect kind of kicks in, that landscaping aspect kicks in, where I'm like, oh, I guess I'm taking my bike and throwing it on my back and throwing it on my shoulders or pushing, right? I guess we're just going to have to like slog through this. And I think back to the 2020 Mid-South, where I had like by far my best gravel result. And it was 1/4 walking, 1/4 hiking. I love that shit. Like,
that's perfect.
When it gets
for
hard like that, like I get so excited. Like, I love pedaling, and I think like honestly pedaling, it's kind of weird because it's like opposite ends of the spectrum, where I think I'm really like pretty good at hike-a-biking. I'm strong. I'm a bigger rider. And I also think I'm pretty good at like riding my bike in a straight line. It's like that technical aspect in the middle where it's like we hit single track, it's slow going, not a great rider. And that's what like, that's what gets me excited about the Divide, where I'm like, what's gonna happen?
A little bit of everything.
What's gonna fucking happen?
Hell yeah.
Bring it on. So, and I think
you
like,
get some of these people with like the high fitness that are dabbling into the bikepacking world, where sure, they may have like a 5-watt, 6-watt per kilo type of fitness, but they've done a hike bike like once in the last 2 years, you know. It's so there's the equalizer, especially over that long of a distance. That's what makes it really exciting.
And so looking at, and this is, I'm going to try to do this from a journalist perspective. looking at the start list for the Divide, European, and these are like when you submit your thing in the divide, it populates you an Excel document and it says like, what is your goal finish time?
Oh, okay.
European, 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 me. I'm a little ambitious. European, European, Australian, and then we get into Americans. Like, there are some.
So it's in order based on their like projected time. Is that how the Excel sheet works?
Their goal time. Yes. Okay. Right. And I just sorted it like that.
What is the fastest goal time right now?
It is Kim Raymakers from Belgium, whose goal time is 14 days, along with Sofian, who's also 14 days. Andrea Galanti is 15 days. I am also 15 days. Ben, I'm going to mess up this name. It's another Belgium name. Strobolt. Ben nice. Strobolt. Let's go with that.
You spent some time in Europe, I can tell.
I'm making it up.
I would have done much worse.
Josh Ibbett.
Okay.
He's back. And like,
nice. That's
you know what? And Josh, and those, that was all 15 days, I think. I have to scroll back and forth. But those are like,
that's exciting.
The 15 days. And then we get a whole bunch of 16 days. And then, you know, talking to like Tim Tate's like, yeah, I didn't put down a goal time. And I'm like, Tim's going to be up there, right? If the weather is fucked up. Tim will be up there. Like, Tim is probably sitting at home right now, just like looking at the weather, you know, maniacally laughing as it snows on these passes, because we talked about it. Mixed Utah Epic is a stout route. Yes. Like, Tim's like, let's go do some fucked up shit. Yeah. The Divide, not necessarily fucked up shit until you get snow over those passes up north. And really, I was talking to a coworker who is trying to hike the CDT. She's doing it northbound rather than, no, she's doing it southbound. Yes. She's doing it southbound. So starting up in, I think it's Montana. Yeah, it's Montana. Glacier National Park. I think that's right. I don't know all the hiking details, but she has been delaying her trip just because up north, like, the reports are that there are passes that you have to hike that are impassable.
Yeah.
Great Divide mountain bike route doesn't really run on that CDT, but at the same time, like, if there's still snow up there, like, those early passes might get real, real interesting, which, bring it on.
This is a little bit of a tangent, but going back to your gear, what are you doing for your feet whenever you do find yourself in that scenario? What's the game plan there?
Multiple wool socks, right? Perlazumi makes some absolutely lovely wool socks that I have, you know, north to south Colorado again, like that first day it was pouring rain and I changed my socks at the gas station, that first resupply point, and my socks dried out overnight. Like, I had them like stuffed on top of my seat pack. Like, I have a little shock cord there to just kind of stuff stuff. Mm-hmm. And the next day, like, I didn't have to change my socks because my feet didn't get wet. But they dried out pretty quickly. You know, if it gets real bad, like, I'm not going to have... Oh, there's the blood glucose. Let's turn that off. If it gets real bad, I mean, the number of times that I have ridden my bike with, like, my feet wrapped in plastic bags to just kind of keep out some of that moisture, like, that's just a super easy thing where I'm not going to bring gaiters. I'm not going to bring shoe covers or stuff like that. Like, it's just... tough it out to a certain extent.
Yeah. Have you heard about Jay Peterberry and Jacob Ora talking about like turkey bags?
Yep. Exactly. Yeah. Kind of similar concept where you can get plastic bags anywhere. And, you know, even descending, like, I remember doing like some road climbs over in Europe where you're going super, super high and it's in Northern Italy and it's always raining. And you are just like taking plastic bags and like stuffing them underneath your jersey to like add another layer of protection and then ripping them out and throwing them away. Like, I did that a number of times. So it's like, you improvise, you figure stuff out. And it's like, yeah, you could bring a super heavy snow kit, I guess, but ultimately it's all about speed. It's about going fast. So
yeah. Okay.
Balance. Find balance.
That's obviously going to be a point of interest along the route. What are some sections you're most looking forward to? and what are some sections you're not all that excited about, if there are any?
Yeah, so honestly, I'm most looking forward to all of it. I fucking love new roads. Like, yes. There is nothing in my life that brings me more joy than riding beautiful new roads. Like, especially if they're gorgeous, it's an established route by Adventurous Cycling Association.
So you know it's good.
You know it's good. You know it's going to be awesome. I have not spent all that much time up in, you know, Montana, Idaho.
Yeah, that
Wyoming,
whole northern section.
Even Colorado. Like, I haven't spent that much time in Colorado. Like, I've driven through it twice, and I did north to south Colorado. But the mountains are just so gorgeous. Like, that is honestly one of the things that is, like, pulling me away from Flagstaff is, yes, we have Humphreys, and it's a fantastic mountain. But I just want to be, like, surrounded by
them.
I just want to be, like, in the mountains. Yeah. And that's what this route is all about. It's all about being in the mountains until you get to New Mexico, which is the state that I'm honestly, like, so, New Mexico.
Arguably one of the hardest stretches, right?
Arguably one of the hardest stretches this year because of wildfires. And this is a conversation I think we should have one day, which is, like, honestly, because of global warming, because of wildfires, like, bikepacking is in danger. Like, these long course races are in danger because this year we're not running the original route. By the time Colorado Trail Race takes place, are they going to be running the original route? Are they going to have to route around wildfires?
Yeah.
Arizona Trail Race, right? Like, the three big bikepacking races in the United States, a clean run at the Triple Crown. Like, honestly, it's like tick tock, tick tock, tick tock. And I don't really want to get into, you know, like, honestly, here's another hot take from Ezra. I don't think anyone gets close to Mike Hall's record this year. Like, really, even with Sofyan, even with all these really fast riders, I just don't think the conditions are conducive to a fast time. I think there's too much snow. I think it's going to be too hot in New Mexico. Like, I just don't think it's the year. I think it's going to be a year of, like, racing each other and attrition. I think it's going to be kind of a grind.
Especially, which is exciting, you know? It's,
yeah, I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of, like, doing a Triple Crown and a clean Triple Crown, you know, I don't, if Sofyan, someone else breaks the record this year, like, I don't know how we decide if that is a fastest known time because it wasn't on the full route. But at the same time, when Mike Hall did it, he didn't have to do Coco. So it's like, it's one of these weird things where it's like, again, this is almost an issue I have with fastest known times, where I am more drawn to just straight up bike racing than I am fastest known times. I think fastest known times are super cool. I honestly believe that a fastest known time earned while doing an event is much more impressive than a fastest known time that is cherry picked. And I know that, like, the whole principle of fastest known time is, like, optimal conditions, do whatever you want to do it, whenever's best. I just think it's really cool when people go out in a race and set a fastest known time. I love that. It's the fact that things go bad and you persevere through, like, things aren't perfect because you weren't able to pick that perfect month and all that all that stuff. And you just dealt with it and were able to get that fastest known time. Mike Hall set that fastest known time doing the Grand Apart in 2016. If anyone breaks Mike Hall's fastest known time, I want it done in the Grand Apart, because there's a whole group of people in the Tour Divide community who, you know, good for them, they've decided to do a smart start, which essentially means that they are pushing their Grand Apart to August in hopes that they don't have to, you know, drag their bike up Coco Claims, do all these things. In my mind, I would be pissed if they decided, oh, we are going to change the start to avoid snow. No, it's in June. Deal with the shit. Deal with what's going on. Like,
no, that's cool. That's something I've come full circle on, honestly, because I've thought about different, like, ITTs and FKT attempts and all this stuff. And I mean, when it boils down to it, man, I want to be part of the community. And so if I'm only cherry picking when everything's perfect, then I'm missing on some of the aspect of getting to play the game with other people. So Yeah. I mean, that's cool to hear. And obviously there's still a time and place for FKT attempts and ITTs and everything. But I love that idea of being part of the party. You know, it's a bunch of people getting together to celebrate this thing that we love so much, and just being part of it and dealing with the same conditions as everyone else just makes it even more of a bonding experience for whatever people that go through it.
Yeah. And I just want to come out, so it's not like, also, like, I kind of love fastest known times, and it's like, do it when you can do it, right? Like, yeah, there's, yeah. You know, this fall, I'm not exactly sure what I'm doing. And there are a few things out west that I'm like, oh, maybe doing a fastest known a time attempt on these courses would be fun, because like everyone's schedule is busy. Like, when you can get available time, there's not a whole lot of bike pack racing going on in December. But at the same time, December's like, if the weather's right out west.
Oh, yeah.
Like, December's a freaking perfect time to do it, because winter just keeps on getting pushed further and further back. And so, like, I was riding in shorts and a short sleeve jersey in December, like late December in Flagstaff this year. So there's spots where it's like, oh, this makes perfect sense. So, you know, do whatever you want to do. At the same time, when I look at it, my personal opinion is doing it during the Grand Apart, little bit more the style. I guess we go back to that whole style thing. I like that style of setting the fastest known time in the race. So, yeah,
cool. So, race itself, what's your game plan getting up there? When are you leaving Flagstaff? Are you doing anything special in Canada before it starts? Do you have any of a broader spectrum of your plan before you're actually doing the race?
Yeah, so it is Sunday night, the week before the divide. So this Friday is going to be the start of the divide. I am driving down to Phoenix Tuesday morning, super, super early with Artec, Flagstaff local. We did North to South Colorado last year together. He's doing the divide. We're just carpooling down there, flying to Calgary. Fingers crossed that my bike shows up on the plane. I am flying with my bike. If it does, here's the thing, dude. I'm excited about the divide course. I'm excited about doing the Tour Divide. I just love the fact that I'm about to check out for 2 weeks.
Like, yeah.
Today was my last day of work.
I hear that.
I'm going to pay my credit card bills tonight.
Fuck yeah.
I'm going to like clean my van. I'm going to dump my gray water. I'm going to clean out my refrigerator. Uh-huh. Everything is going to be perfect. Not perfect. Yeah. Everything is going to be nice and neat. And then I'm just disappearing. Yeah. I know this is a audio only podcast, but I bleached my hair the other day.
Yeah,
so I'm rocking some ridiculous bleached hair. I've got a ridiculous mustache, because this whole thing is ridiculous and it's awesome. Like, it's just, it's a reminder in a way to have fun with it, right? Mm-hmm. When I go into a gas station and I've been riding 200 miles and I'm fucked up and I don't want to do it, I'm going to look in the mirror and I'm going to see this ridiculous mustache and I'm going to see this bleached hair and I'm going to be like, you're having fun out here.
Yeah.
You are like disconnected from everything that's going on in the world, which is honestly, I think, something that people need to do more of. Like, I love when I just turn it all off and just a singular focus of riding my bike, enjoying the ride, enjoying the surroundings, experiencing everything that happens on the ride. Like, I'm just so fucking stoked on that. And that's what I get to do for the next 2+ weeks. And really, it starts Tuesday, right? It's like, once I, like, my buddy's driving my van down there with our bike boxes and whatever. And like, once that van leaves and I jump on that plane, get to Calgary, get my bike, I'm going to ride over to Banff either in 1 day or 2 days. I just mapped it out. It's about 90 miles. So
okay.
I might do it in 2 days and just like find a campground like halfway. I won't be illegal camping, that's for sure. If you're listening to this, don't fucking illegal camp and get mauled by a grizzly bear. Not a good move. Find an established campground, please. Let's like, what's the name of the Canadian, the Mounties, right?
Yeah.
The Canadian. Yeah. Yep. Let's keep the Mounties on our side so we can continue to have a good Tour Divide experience. Don't
are you
going to
hit
shit
up like a Timmy Hortons? Are you going to get some poutine? Are you going to like do some Canadian classic things before you start?
I have no idea. I mean, isn't poutine like Quebec? That's like French Canada, right? That's not really.
Man, I had some in, where was it? The Yukon Territory. They had it over there. Had some in British Columbia too, I think. Maybe British Columbia. I'm not sure.
I've had poutine. I think poutine's delicious. Poutine is not pre-race food. Sorry. Tim Hortons, though. Donuts, I mean.
Okay. Some
donuts are always food.
Timmy Ho's. All right. Good.
Maybe some Tim Hortons. I'll swing by for breakfast.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah, but riding over to Banff. I will be in Banff on Wednesday. Well, I'll arrive on Wednesday. Got a hostel. Not the main hostel or hotel or whatever it is. I like being removed from stuff a little bit, especially with this, where if you're, like, at the race hotel, I've done that experience where you're at a race hotel and all you can think about is, like, racing because you're constantly surrounded by it. Mm-hmm. So just having a little bit of separation, go back to my hostel, chill out on that Thursday, and then, yeah, Friday morning.
Showtime.
It's go time. Let's go.
That's going to be fun. Oh, my God. I'm stoked for you, man. And then when you get down to Antelope Wells in 15 days or less, how are you getting out of there?
How am I getting out of there? He's not my coworker anymore because he is done. He worked at REI for 15 years and his last day was last week. He's moving on to bigger and better things. He is going to jump in his Prius. I'm going to have like a backpack in my, I'm also parking my van at his house for this period of time. He's a really good friend. He's always down for an adventure. Yeah. Devin, he's a great guy. He's going to come and pick me up. I'm going to have a bag filled with like clothing and, you know, I may or may not have a Corona that I've been holding on to for like a few months now that I'm like, oh, this is my divide beer. I'm going to drink this at the end of the divide. So there's going to be a Corona in there and I'm sure he will come through and bring me a whole bunch of food and pick me up from Antelope Wells because yeah, it's in the middle of nowhere. That's always a fun time. Like trying to, you might finish the race and really the best option would be to ride out of Antelope Wells. But no one wants to fucking do that, right?
No.
You just did 2,600 miles. You want to get picked up and leave, but there's nothing out there. You are just in the middle of nowhere. So big shout out to Devin. I don't think you actually listen to the podcast. And if you do, you probably didn't make it this far, but big shout out to Devin for coming and saving me. Greatly appreciate it.
We all need friends like Devin. Good job, Devin.
Exactly.
And the Prius, he's going to be able to save a little bit of gas money because gas is steep right now. Let me tell you, man, it is messed up.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I would love to have my van at the finish line. That would be incredible to have my house there. But I don't think it's $500 of gas money incredible to have my house there. Take the Prius. I'll pay you back, Devin. I'll pay you back.
Rad. Cool. Any other final thoughts on this insane adventure you're about to go on? I mean, this has been a long time coming. It's here. I mean, we're less than a week away, which is crazy to think. We've been talking about this since January and you've been thinking about this for years.
Yeah, like honestly all the preparation I've done, it still hasn't like hit me that I'm about to do the fucking Tour Divide.
Mm-hmm.
Like it hasn't actually, like it has been, you know, like for 2 years something that I'm like directly working towards. But it's also been on the back of my mind for I don't even know how long. I don't even know how long until I was like, yes, I want to do that. I want to do the biggest bikepacking race in the world. Like, I want to do the fucking Tour de France of bikepacking.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I love I'm hearing this perspective because you have so many people. They're like, oh, yeah, this is my third time, my fourth time. I've won it, this kind of thing. This is what you hear a lot, but you don't hear from the person that's, this is my first time. I'm excited. Sure, I just want to do the thing, but I also want to play the game a little bit too. So I love that, one, you're super excited on the route, being in the mountains, but two, you're wanting to test the waters of what you can do as far as time-wise. I mean, you're up there with a bunch of Europeans on Excel sheet. You're going for something, right?
Yeah, and there's part of me that, like, I'm like, maybe that's just... My entire life, I've always like set goals that are too fucking lofty, right? Like that's just my MO is, you know, I wanted to be a professional road cyclist and I never got there, right? And I worked fucking hard to get there.
Mm-hmm.
Time and time again, I've set these ridiculously lofty goals and haven't actually like fully met them. But at the same time, I don't regret setting really hard goals because it just pushes me. And like that's, I did a interview for a local magazine a few days ago, and one of the questions that she asked was like, what do you think your like greatest achievement in cycling is? And it was such a weird question to answer.
Mm-hmm.
Because like there is not like a banner result that I like look back on and I'm like, this is who I am, I won this race in this year. And my answer to the question was like my longevity. I've like had so many different phases of cycling, right? And that's ridiculous to say because I'm only like 28 years old. Mm-hmm. But the fact that, you know, I had this like road career and then I did, you know, multiple like tours across the country. And now I'm like doing these really fucking awesome bikepacking races. And like, I'm not going anywhere. That's the other thing is like, yeah, I have these like super hard, high expectations because that's what like gets me out of bed day after day. And that's what gets me on the bike. And that's what, you know, gets me in the gym is these big lofty goals. But shit, I want to be doing the divide in 20 years from now. Yeah. Right? Like, yeah. I don't.
This is only year one. This is the beginning.
This is year one. Like, I'm still a baby. Like, really? Mm-hmm. I'm just like, this is my first divide. Like, if multiple fucking miracles happen and I, like, somehow win this thing, right? Then I defend, right? Like, that's the other thing is, like, then I have to come back next year and defend it. If I don't win, then I might take a year off and go do something else and then come back the next year. But it's nice. Like, I'm not going anywhere. Like, that's, like, I fucking love riding my bike, and I'm pretty sure I'm going to absolutely love the divide. Just like, you know, can't wait to go back to North to South Colorado because I love that course. Can't wait to do Pinions and Pines because I love Pinions and Pines and all the fucked up shit that Dana throws at me. And it's like all these things. I just want to do it all. And so that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to keep on doing it. And, you know,
I love it.
The other thing with the divide is like, yes, I have these like really high expectations, and I'm just going to keep on saying this. If I have to turn it into a tour, take a day off, fully recover, if something happens and I have to, God forbid there's something bad happens that like derails me from racing it, I just got to turn it into touring mode. Like I'm going to finish this thing. Like,
yes,
I have the time off of work. I have an extra week off of work after my planned finishing time. I'm going to get it done. Like, got to get it done. So I'm excited.
That's a great way to end. I love the energy. Next time we're doing a podcast, we're going to be hearing about your experience. So fuck yeah, dude. We're here. This is it. It's
hell yeah.
Tour Divide time. Go get it.
Fucking Tour Divide time. This has been episode 14 of the Bike Pack Racing Podcast. Let's go.